Okay. We are definitely on the record now. So we will begin then with Reinke versus Perry Smith. And Ms. Whittemore Mancios is here for the appellant. And so, counsel, we will turn the argument over to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Melanie Whittemore Mancios. And since we filed the briefs in this case, our firm has merged and we are now Baylor, Esmond, Wuff, and Tannehill. I represent Ryan Reinke on this appeal. The appeal involves two issues: whether Mr. Reinke was entitled to specific performance of the February 28th, 2017 purchase agreement that he had with Ms. Perry Smith. And secondly, if he wasn't entitled to specific performance, then whether Ms. Perry Smith should have been awarded $15,000 money, earnest money in this case. The facts in this case are simple. The property at issue is a commercial property at 4721 Douglas Circle in Lincoln. Ms. Perry Smith had owned this property since 2001 with her ex-husband. They had operated a business out of there. It was a hazardous material cleanup business. When she was divorced, the business ceased to exist, but she continued to own the property. There always had been a tenant in there, a painter who had part of the commercial building, and she had the rest of the building. She left the equipment, the tools, the chemicals from the business, and also used her side of the property to store her personal property from her cabin, from Christmas stuff. And I think there was also a car stored there. Part of the impediment to her selling this property was what to do and how to clean up the property. Mr. Reinke, when he was approaching Ms. Perry Smith about this, had assured her that he would clean up the property, that it wasn't going to be a problem, and she wouldn't have to worry about it. On February 28th of 2017, they signed a purchase agreement to sell the property for $187,500 and that Mr. Reinke paid $15,000 in earnest money. They were supposed to close on the property on March 28th of 2017. The purchase agreement did not include the purchase of any personal property at the building. However, Mr. Reinke believed that he could offset the cost of disposing of the chemical material by selling some of the tools and equipment that were at the property.
And counsel, who prepared the written agreement?
Mr. Reinke did. Around March 27th of 2017, the day before the closing of the property, Mr. Reinke learned that Ms. Perry Smith had posted some of the tools and equipment machinery on Craigslist, and he was very upset about it. So he did not close on the property on March 28th of 2017. He wanted to consult with an attorney and see what his legal rights were. On April 7th of 2017, Ms. Perry Smith texted Mr. Reinke and said, "What's going on? You know, are we going to close on the property?" And Mr. Reinke assured her that it was his intent to close on the property, and that he was consulting with an attorney and wanted to know the name of her attorney. She said
By March 28th, she had signed all the documents.
Correct.
Otherwise done all that she was required to do under the contract.
That is absolutely correct. She was, in fact, in the title company signing the material at the time that she had a conversation with Mr. Reinke about what was going on with the Craigslist item being sold.
And he did not sign those documents on March 28th.
He did not come to March 28th to do it. On April 20th of 2017, Mr. Reinke's attorney sent Ms. Perry Smith a letter asking about the property that she had sold and wanting to renegotiate on the price, but still indicating that Mr. Reinke was intent on closing on the property. On April 28th of 2017, Ms. Perry Smith responded that she didn't want to sell the property to Mr. Reinke anymore, and she was willing to return his earnest money to him.
He declined that offer, didn't he?
Yes. I mean, at that time, there was no communication between either of them. Mr. Reinke tried to contact Ms. Perry Smith after that and was unsuccessful in making any contact with her, nor did he have the name of her attorney to contact either. Then on October 18th of 2018, Mr. Reinke tried to close on the property, contacted the title company, exchanged texts with Ms. Perry Smith at that time, and she indicated again she wanted both of them to sign a letter indicating to the title company that they were both canceling their agreement. So those are the simple facts of the case. To obtain specific performance, Mr. Reinke bears the burden of proving that there's a valid purchase agreement, that specific performance would not be inequitable or unjust, and that he was willing to close on the property. There's no dispute that the purchase agreement was valid, nor is it inequitable or unjust to give Mr. Reinke specific performance of the agreement.
Counsel, let me sure. Just clarify one thing.
Sure.
So we were at April of 17, and then you said it went to October, but it was October of 18, was it not?
October of 2018. You are right.
So between April of 17 and October of 18, there had been no further negotiations or communications.
There had been no communication, despite Mr. Reinke's attempts to contact her by phone. There had not been. That's correct.
Was the evidence controverted on that? Was there any evidence?
That... Ms. Perry Smith denied that Mr. Reinke had called her, but there's also evidence in the record that Ms. Perry Smith did not answer her phone if she did not know the phone number, and that when Mr. Reinke called her the day of March 27th of 2017, she did not recognize his phone number and called him back. So
he was calling from a different number, wasn't he?
I don't believe so. I don't think there's any evidence of that.
The evidence was that the number he was calling from was different than what he had originally been dealing with her.
I'm not aware of that being evidence of a different number. Didn't
the district court in her order make the statement that she found her testimony credible and your client's testimony not credible?
Yes.
And that's her call. That's her call.
Absolutely. As a finder of fact, that is her call.
Manager, initially the problem seems to be that your client thought there was a separate oral agreement with regard to the contents.
Correct.
But as I understand it, at trial, you abandoned that.
Right.
So then we get to this long time period.
And the
question becomes, is that reasonable? How is it reasonable for there to be such a long time period pass?
I think you have to look at the facts of the case. Here we have, both parties were not moving to get this matter resolved, not just Mr. Reinke, but Ms. Perry Smith as well. She was not in a hurry to sell the property. It's not that she had some other buyer out there who wanted to buy the property. The purchase agreement itself did not provide that time was of the essence. If of the two parties, it's Mr. Reinke who wanted to close the deal sooner than Mrs. Perry Smith did. He at no time advised her that he did not want to carry through with purchasing the property. In fact, Mr. Reinke to this day very much wants to purchase that property. He had the right to explore what his legal rights were, and he did. And the delay was also affected by Ms. Perry Smith's unwillingness to close on the property and to honor their agreement. And Mr. Reinke, unfortunately, there is this time gap, but as between these two parties, it's not an unreasonable time period. He didn't breach the purchase agreement. He still was willing to close on the deal. And if you look at the time, there's less than a month after the time it was supposed to close on March 28th of 2017 that Mr. Ranke's attorney was reaching out to Ms. Perry Smith to get the matter resolved. So I think if you look at the facts of this case and what Ms. Perry Smith was saying on April 28th of 2017, I don't think that you can hold Mr. Ranke responsible for the time delay in getting the matter closed.
Well, was he really ready and willing and able to close the deal? Because it seems like until right up until trial, he wasn't. That he wanted to enforce the oral agreement.
No, I don't think that's correct. In fact, I think on October 18th of 2018, he was making arrangements with the title company to go there and sign the thing. So I think that's not a correct statement of what the record shows.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions, Judge Welch or Judge Bertel?
No, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Wittman-Mazios and Mr. Bacon.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Joel Bacon and I represent the appellee, Victoria Perry Smith. So this case really is about specific performance, and the rule is that a party is not entitled to specific performance if they are not ready, willing, and able to perform at the time performance is due underneath the contract. And when you have a contract like this that has a specific closing date but doesn't make time as a time of the essence, the rule is that closing is supposed to happen either at the date in the contract or a reasonable time thereafter. The appellant actually cites a case from Missouri in their brief. It's the In Re Estate of Schler case, and that in turn has a pretty helpful quote, I think, from Professor Corbin on what this reasonable time thereafter concept is. And it's tied to a slight delay. That's his terminology, a slight delay. So the idea is, hey, we have a title issue that popped up that we weren't expecting, or there's an inspector who we were gonna have do an inspection and he got sick, or financing isn't quite coming together like we thought it was, and we need a few extra days to get that taken care of. And that slight delay kind of matches up with the Nebraska cases, because what you see is sometimes, well, 7 days might be reasonable. There's a case where it's like that. But the Tedco case, which is from the 1970s, indicates 5 days in that case was not reasonable when they were trying to get financing put together. And what we have happened here is not like any of that. What we have here is the appellant making an incorrect accusation of breach and then trying to use that incorrect accusation of breach to get a lower purchase price. And that's what's driving the delay. And that's not a reasonable reason to delay. And so to kind of recap the facts, the closing date was March 28th. My client did everything she was supposed to do. She showed up on the 27th, signed all the paperwork. While she's doing so, she gets a call from Mr. Reinke, who accuses her of having breached this supposed oral agreement with respect to the personal property. I think it's not contested at this point in time that that was incorrect. The next day, he doesn't show up to sign any of the paperwork. 10 days go by. My client affirmatively reaches out to him and says, what are your intentions? And he doubles down on his theory that there had been a breach, demands that she turn over documents showing what she'd sold, how much property had been sold for, and then says, my attorneys are drawing up paperwork, which to me, that's a threat of litigation. About 10 days later, we get this letter from the appellant's then counsel. And that does say, please be advised that the appellant remains ready and willing to close the sale. However, and I think this is one of those situations where everything before the word however doesn't matter, because after the word we have, however, the consideration he agreed to pay included sums you both attributed to the building's contents. Therefore, the purchase price needs to be adjusted to reflect the amounts you receive for the contents that have been sold. So that's not an attempt to close according to the terms of the agreement. That's an attempt to leverage this supposed breach, an incorrect claim of breach, to try to get a lower purchase price. So at that point in time, what we're talking about is a delay in closing to try to get a lower purchase price based upon an incorrect accusation of breach a reasonable delay? And I think the answer to that is no. And after this letter, my client emails the attorney back and says, I didn't do anything wrong, but I appreciate your client is upset about this. I'm willing to walk away and we can return the earnest money. And then it's nothing. It's nothing for 18 months. So if they were really serious about closing, the appellant was really serious about closing under the terms of this agreement, he should have reached out to my client and said something like, I'm so sorry, I was incorrect about my claim of breach. And now I'm willing to close according to the terms of the agreement. There's nothing like that at all in the record. And really to judge, I think it was Atterburn's point earlier, we walked into trial, not sure if that was going to be the argument or not, about whether or not this oral agreement was still in play or not. We got that concession at trial, but that was, I think, the first time, and that's 5 years later, that we actually understand that this oral agreement is no longer in play. So then we go to October of 2018, that's 18 months later, the appellant finally reaches out to my client and says something like, what do you want to do with the property? Not, I'm ready to close according to the terms of the agreement. My client then texts him back and says, we just need to go into the title company and cancel the agreement. And his response then isn't, well, no, I'm ready to close according to the terms of the agreement. He just asked for the title company's phone number. And then he unilaterally sets up a closing. I don't know what terms it was supposed to be under. And at that point in time, I mean, there's no communication to my client, so she didn't even know this closing had been scheduled, right? And so the next time she hears anything, there's some vague reference to maybe another contact by an attorney in the spring of 2019. And then they file suit in June of 2019. And at no point in time is there any attempt to clarify, you know, that claim of breach was wrong. We were incorrect and we're ready to close according to the terms of the agreement. Some reference to possible attempts to communicate with my client. The testimony at trial was that they almost always communicated via text. And he obviously knew how to text her because he did that in October 2018. And he never attempted to do that during that 18-month period. And I think, again, Judge Idias made that finding a fact, and the court can give discretion to that determination. So I think when we look at this, the course of conduct that we see on the part of the defendant or the appellant, excuse me, is inconsistent with sort of basic principles of equity. So things like specific performance will not be granted where enforcement would be unjust. Well, my client had to pay all the taxes, had to pay the association dues, was bearing the risk of loss, all while he's basically engaged in land speculation to wait to see if the price is going to go up or not. And then, you know, 18 months later, 5 years later, however you want to look at it, he can try to close and reap whatever profit there might be. That's the very definition of unjust. So I think that falls within the basic principle that one seeking equity must do equity. It's also inconsistent with the concept that the party seeking specific performance must show by clear, satisfactory, and unequivocal evidence their right to specific performance. That's inconsistent with the evidence here. The evidence here does not show that at all. This was not an attempt to close according to the terms of the agreement. Just briefly, I want to hit on, I think, the second assignment of error, which ties to the return of the earnest deposit, the $15,000. As I understand the argument the appellant made in their brief, that was really tied to their idea that they should have been entitled to specific performance. But all of the course of conduct we've discussed here today, so the incorrect allegation of breach, doubling down on that incorrect allegation of breach, sending the demand letter request or demanding a lower purchase price, and then doing nothing to clarify any of that and just letting this linger for 18 months, that's not performing under the contract. And given that my client was entitled to retain that earnest deposit as a form of liquidated damages for the delay, harm, and expense that she suffered in protecting her rights. So with that, we'd ask that the Court of Appeals affirm, unless there's any questions from the court. Thank you.
All right. Judge Welch, any questions?
No.
All right. Well, thank you, counsel. I believe we used all of Ms. Whittemore Mangio's time, so there's no rebuttal. The case will be taken under submission. We thank you for appearing today, and the decision will be forthcoming. So you are excused.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.